It is time to talk birds. Retired non-game wildlife biologist Pam Perry from the Brainerd area joins us now. Welcome back, Pam.
Well, good morning, Heidi and John. It's good to be here.
Yeah, good morning. Were you listening this morning just a few minutes ago when Bob walked in and spotted the red crossbill right over my shoulder on the tree outside the window?
No, I missed that.
Oh, my goodness. It was a female and bright yellow-orange, just gorgeous. She was really pretty.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Birds are out there, and we got lots of them. This morning, I wanted to talk a little bit about red-headed woodpeckers because you talked about them last week.
Good. Excellent.
And I know they're less common in the Northeast than they are in central Minnesota. But they are one of my favorite birds. And they're very, very interesting. And I had something unusual happen this spring. Is I had a red-headed woodpecker show up in my backyard at the feeders for 8 days.
Wow.
I've never had that happen before. I've had them come through where they would just show up once, but I think it had to do with the weather. You know, it's one of the things I love on Tuesday morning. We have phenology, weather, and it's all connected.
It surely is, yeah. And then throw some birds on top.
Red-headed woodpeckers are really, their habitat that they need is what they call savanna, which is trees and open areas. And historically, they were in, this was prairie grasses, and oak savanna in particular with, you know, so think open with oak trees and then just lots of open areas. And that habitat has become less and less in Minnesota and pastures too. You know, more has gone into row crops. There's more of that kind of intensive agriculture where they used to be. Red-headed woodpeckers used to be quite common in Minnesota, and now they're very uncommon. So it's very exciting when we see them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. As I mentioned last week talking about them, I can remember exactly where I was when I saw my last one. Just, I could drive to the spot today and point to the tree that I saw it on. And the one thing that I noticed as a child, there were more, but because there were a lot more people who had these sort of subsistence farms and who were running 10 or 12 cattle in a pasture that was, you know, woods and grass, and the cows kind of suppressed the underbrush and ate the grass down and sort of created artificial savannas.
They did. And fire is one of the ways that savannas are maintained.
Yep.
With the prairie grasses, those were suppressed. So this is a bird that is not found in deep forest, contiguous forest. But what was interesting, and when I was working for the DNR, I found them on lake shores because we opened up the lake shores. Right?
Right, yeah.
Lake homes, cabins, it opened up. And I also found them on golf courses.
Golf courses, I was going to say.
Again, it was open.
Yeah. Yep, they clear out they clear out the rough. They don't take the trees out, but they take out all the brush and so that you can find your golf ball in there. And
right, yeah, right. And so an interesting thing about redhead woodpeckers is that now with our downy, hairy, pileated woodpeckers, they don't migrate. When you have them in your area, they stay there. But some woodpeckers migrate, or they sort of migrate, or they go a little ways. And that the redheaded is in that group with the yellow-bellied sapsucker and the northern flicker. So they'll go further south a ways and come back. Some redheads will stay, I call them redheads, will stay all winter, but they have to have a really good spot, and they can get kind of colonial. which is interesting. So if they have the right habitat, they have a lot of food, it's always about food availability, and then enough cavities, and that's what they love, the oak trees. So oaks are good, and that's where you're going to find them.
So
now, yes, John.
No, you go ahead.
Well, I mentioned that I had one for 8 days in my backyard. I spoke to two other people that also had redheads at about the same time in their backyard for a couple days. I mean, this was unusual behavior. And the one, when I had it here, it was coming in and eating off of the suet cake. And I think it was the weather, the food wasn't available. They went in, they did something they don't normally do just to find food.
Mm-hmm. You know, you were talking about those, the migration and non-migration of woodpeckers, and you you hit everyone I would have named. It's interesting, at my feeder, and I have suet cakes out, with the downy and the hairy and the pileated, lately it is, well, for the pileated, it's always the male who comes. And he takes, and I can only assume that he's bringing food back to the nest, but he takes a long time, and he picks up a lot of suet, which I assume he's storing in a pouch in his throat somewhere, and then going back to the nest and feeding his young. So that sort of thing. But I don't get two hairies, two male hairies, or two male downies, or two male pileateds. They are territorial enough that suet cake belongs to a single woodpecker of a species. And it's kind of interesting that they can all share that suet, in the fact that they are not sharing the same niche in the environment when they're away from the suet. I mean, that's why they tolerate one another. They're not.
Yes. The word is tolerate each other. And when they're nesting, they like to have, it's mine. Everything's mine. John, I wanted to go back to the pileated. I heard you play earlier this morning.
Yes.
The sound of the nestlings.
Right.
And I heard that a couple days ago on the south side of my house, and I have some big aspen there. And I was going, what is that weird noise? Because it's almost a hissing noise.
It
doesn't
surprised
sound
me.
Like what you think of baby birds. And then I saw the pileated there, and I thought, oh, it's the nest. There's nestlings. The nest cavity is in one of those aspen trees right over there. And it was loud.
Well, hey, how about we take a listen to that again? Just a quick clip of that.
That'd be great.
Yeah, they're not concerned about giving away their nesting location.
And you mentioned, because they're in a cavity.
Yeah, you would, if you were a squirrel, you wouldn't put your...
Bigger predators can't get in there.
Yeah, well, and you wouldn't, if you were a red squirrel, you wouldn't put your face in there. That would.
Oh, goodness, no. You're just going to meet a bunch of beaks.
Yes.
So,
can we eat
anyways,
this?
Yes, it's that season, and when you're in the woods out there, listen, and if you hear some strange noises, these woodpeckers, I've heard sapsuckers as well, mm-hmm. and they're very noisy when they're still in the cavity.
Yep, when they have a nest that allows them to be raucous, and so they are, but those birds that don't have that same protection end up being much quieter. I know I have listened to the ravens when they're feeding their young. And boy, if you're not within a few hundred feet of, 100 feet of their nest and being very quiet, you will not hear them at all. They're very, mm-hmm. very secretive.
Yep. And I often say that when birds are nesting, the majority, they disappear. You don't hear them. They're being very sneaky because they don't want predators to find their nest.
Yeah.
Is what they're doing. Now, I also wanted to mention scarlet tanagers.
Ah.
because they are around.
Yeah.
And they like bigger forest areas. And they come to my feeders. They come to my bird bath. I see them there regularly. Mm. One of our last hikes at the Arboretum, we had a scarlet tanager, saw the male, the female, the leader found those, and then a nest as well.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So they're there. And, of course, you can't mistake the male with red with the black wings.
Right.
But the female is greenish with kind of darker wings, kind, you know, drab, very drab to blend in. And so those birds are around. You may miss them if you're not really looking for them. They will come into feeders. They will eat grape jelly.
Ah.
So, you know, that's. And what I wanted to mention about them is different from like woodpeckers. Scarlet tanagers are what we call neotropical migrants. And most of them spend the winter in Central America. They're down in the tropics. And then when they come back here, they're eating insects. That's the main thing they want. They will do some fruits, but it's a lot of insects. The other interesting thing about scarlet tanagers is that bright red male, the end of summer, he will molt and turn green. And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you can tell him from the female because he has black wings.
Yeah. Now, it brings up an interesting question. The goldfinch does something similar. The male is quite spectacular in the summer and then molts to something drab in the fall and winter, and then molts again in the spring to grow back those other feathers. Are there a lot of birds that do that double molt in a year? That seems like a lot of energy.
It's a lot of energy, but it's all about raising youngsters, and you know, they get into the breeding season, and the males are in breeding plumage.
Yeah.
And then they want to blend in afterwards. When they're not nesting, things are quieter, they want to blend in.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's all about, predator avoidance.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
With that. One other bird I wanted to mention were the orioles. I have a jelly feeder out. I'm still seeing orioles regularly. Now, usually it's more May and they quit, but I think with the cool weather we've been having, they're still coming. I already had one this morning.
Mm.
And I used to have people tell me, well, they come in May and then they're gone. I never see them again. And, you know, they'll bring their youngsters back.
Right.
When the young ones fledge. So keep the jelly out there if you have a jelly feeder, because they're beautiful. So these are all beautiful birds: redhead woodpeckers, scarlet tanagers, and then, of course, our Baltimore orioles. Beautiful birds that we have here in the summer.
Yeah. The oriole, the female showed up at our feeder about, I think it was Wednesday, maybe Thursday last week, and came to the hummingbird feeder and wasn't able to get her beak in there to get a drink. So we got out, we have an oriole feeder, and we got that out and put it out, but she has not come to that. And I don't know, you know, if she will or if he will, but I hear them in the yard, so I know that they're there. They're just, I assume they're munching on bugs.
They are.
And speaking of that, where are we with hummingbirds? Have they not fledged, but have they got their young, are they sitting on eggs? There seems to be a sort of a slowdown in the amount of liquid that I'm losing to the hummingbirds each day.
Yeah, I'm seeing that too. I'm just not seeing a lot of activity, and I'm expecting they're on eggs, and when those hatch, we're going to see more activity.
Yeah,
because then the adults will be feeding more heavily.
Right.
They are around. One other thing I just thought of, John, you mentioned you had seen three monarchs.
Yeah.
I've seen one.
Oh my. Yeah. That's my friend Dallas over in Akeley. He's seen one. And that's kind of disappointing or concerning.
Well, it is. And I have, of course, I have a lot of milkweed on my property, and I usually see more, but maybe with this warmer weather, we'll see more activity. I mean, they're predicting 80 for Brainerd today. So we'll see.
Yeah. It'll feel good compared to, well, I don't mind it when it's cool. It's a good working weather, but I'm getting to an age where work isn't all that it's cracked up to be, and I'd much rather sit on the deck in a nice sunny spot and get and warm.
And feel the warm breeze coming in on you and listen to the birds. And
maybe
watch
sip a gin and tonic and watch for monarchs. There you go. Mm-hmm. Pam, thanks so much for joining us. Always a pleasure. I look forward to every month when we get a chance to chat. And thanks for clearing up some
things. It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Lovely.